Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. 2-for-1, no concern for the future, living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow. Mad cow line dance song.
Hey, Song Guy Nation, welcome to the show here on another Friday afternoon. Real fast before we jump into it today, if you're looking for some wrestling, tonight WCWO running like usual at the Outlaw Arena in Indianapolis. Game Changer Wrestling having a 24-hour show starting tonight, ending tomorrow night. That is available on IWTV, so you can stream that and watch 24 hours worth of wrestling from Game Changer. PSW happening in Piedmont, Alabama. And Pro Wrestling Conquest happening in Charleston, West Virginia. Tomorrow night, Supreme Wrestling in Madison, Indiana. There is a benefit show happening for a guy by the name of Ox in Franklin, Georgia. OWA in Hillard, Ohio. And Wrestle Club will be streaming its show from Boise, Idaho. Go to the Wrestle Club Facebook page or YouTube channel and you can catch that show. But without any further ado, I want to welcome back to the program one of our favorite guests, great guy in the professional wrestling industry, someone I've known for quite a while, Diamond Dan Garza. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Sign Guy. I appreciate you having me on once again. You cut that music off too quick. I was listening to that fantastic opening song that you had going on there.
That is Mad Cow Line Dance by the Sea Squirrels, if you want to look that up later.
Well, I'm sure there's probably a line dance that goes with it too then, right?
I've not seen a sea squirrel do the line dance, but it wouldn't shock me if some of them have done it.
Yeah, I'm sure. All right, well, let's talk some wrestling. What's going on?
Absolutely. Now, since we last had you on the show, you may have noticed the world as a whole looks a little bit differently, but we're starting to try to ease back into things. I know Indiana has had some shows running in the last few months. It's been more open than a lot of places has. What does the independent scene look like right now from what you're assessing?
Well, it's kind of actually hit and miss. I mean, certain places, it depends on the county that you're in. I mean, with the COVID restrictions, if they're in red, it's like 25 people they can let in. So some people aren't even trying because it's not worth it unless they're doing like an internet wrestling show and just, you know, streaming it. And then there's some that you can have up to 50 people. And for them, that's, you know, keeps them going. WCWO, which is running every Friday night and has for years and years, are still running shows, going strong there with Joey Kid Owens under the helm now. So they are keeping busy. And then, you know, I know IWA is running some shows in Jeffersonville, sometimes at the arena. But it's really kind of been hit and miss. I noticed there's a few promotions, IPW, it's going to start running some shows here in the next month or so. I'm not sure how, you know, they're going to do. But, you know, people are trying. You know, people are missing wrestling around here, and they want to see it. But it's just it's too tough, and it's if you can't make money, then it's not worth running the show. When you can only have 25 or 50 people in, it's tough to pay your wrestlers, and it's tough to pay your buildings and so forth. So hopefully things will lighten up with everybody getting or starting to get their COVID vaccines and, you know, just being safe in general, opening up things and making it happen.
Now, you, of course, in recent years have gravitated from in-ring competition and promoting wrestling to working as a ring announcer for various promotions. I know it's vastly different from what you did at the beginning portion of your career, although you did some ring announcing way earlier than recent times as well. But what do you like about being a ring announcer for different promoters and not having to deal with running shows yourself necessarily and doing all the bumps and doing the like heavy lifting, if you will, on shows?
Oh, it's just so much easier to be able just to kind of come in, you know, a couple hours before the show, get all the information that you need on the guys, and then, you know, just get in there and do your ring announcing, you know, push their, you know, their merchandise tables and stuff during the intermissions. When you're done, you know, help out a little bit and go home. But, yeah, you don't have to worry about the weeks of preparation of trying to book in the building, booking the guys, people canceling, rebooking other guys, putting up posters, flyers, getting your name out there. It's just so much easier. I mean, yeah, there's times I wish I could still get in the ring and do all that stuff, but my body tells me different, so I know better to even try. So I'm happy with this. I'm still, you know, kind of part of pro wrestling, and I've done everything from setting up the ring, tearing down the ring, to TV and you know, ring announcing. So every bit of it I've done and not afraid to do. So some people think they can only do one thing, but I think you got to change with the times and be willing to do whatever you can fit into, I think.
I always tell people learn everything and you become that much more valuable to a wrestling promotion.
That is true. Anything that you can do that's going to help them out is going to be more of a need for you to be part of the promotion, whether it's behind the scenes or, you know, in the ring one way or the other, wrestling or ring announcing or refereeing, whatever it takes. I mean, you know, like I had mentioned before, when I first got into pro wrestling with my size back then, I wish I was that size now, but I only thought I was probably going to be a referee, but I ended up wrestling. So you never know where it's going to take you and the places you're going to get to see, and it's just it's a odd carny life, but, you know, I've enjoyed it, and, you know, I know a lot of other people that's made a good living out of it and continue to do that and always wish them the best, and, you know, I kind of chose my path to kind of stick with my real job and not, you know, try to give that up and follow a dream because I, you know, wanted to make sure I could take care of the family, the kids, and house and everything else, so that's what I chose, but I'm not disappointed with what I've done or the things I've done with wrestling or places I've been. So I'm happy with that.
It's often said on this show that the ring announcer is the face of the company, whether they directly are involved in the office end of that promotion or not. It's what the fans will associate in their minds that ring announcers are the people in charge of the show. They get their information from the ring announcers. They learn how to follow the show, how to get to the next event, so forth and so on. You've been around the Indiana area for a long time in all of the roles that you've done. I'm sure that there's fans out there that have followed you from the beginning that still go to shows that you ring announce here in recent times. What do you think of the role of the ring announcer being sort of an underappreciated, overlooked role in professional wrestling? I know it's very important, but a lot of people don't truly grasp how important that can be.
Yeah, well, you know, I agree with you in a sense, but a wise man once told me people don't pay to come to see the ring announcer, and in fact, that's true for the most part, but you are right that they're there. They're kind of the face of it. They're what people see before the matches, after the matches, in intermission, and given the information of what's going on. And they do have to make sure they do a good job. I mean, it's not about the ring announcer. I've seen too many that make it that, you know, they are the show. And that's not what people are paying to see. They're paying to see wrestling. But if you're not a good ring announcer, if you're not a good referee, or a good wrestler, I mean, people aren't going to put up with it, and that's not what they want to see. So it is important that you know what's going on, who the wrestlers are, kind of the back storyline of what's going on, so you can kind of help set up matches for the following show, later that evening, you know, whatever it takes. But, I mean, I will say they're underappreciated, but I think more so in the past, it was just kind of we'll pick whoever, they can just say the names, whatever. But now there's a lot of ring announcers that know wrestling. They know behind the scenes. They know what's going on, and it's made a difference. I think there's a lot of good ring announcers out there right now that are doing a great job.
Absolutely. I think you're exactly right. I'll put you in that category as well.
I appreciate that.
Now, when you were actively wrestling, you wrestled and promoted at the same time, and you not only wrestle on other promotions television, including the famous Memphis television, as well as WCW programming, you ran your own promotion that had television within Indianapolis, so you have a pretty good idea about television production and what it takes to be successful with that. What can you tell us as far as your experiences, is the difference between your standard independent company that only has shows in front of the fans that are in the building versus a show that is trying to get television out to the masses?
Well, I think the biggest difference is when you're doing TV and taping TV, you're not really taping or putting the show on for the crowd there. The wrestlers are putting the show on for the audience at home. So, I mean, you're not really going out and trying to get the crowd, you know, to cheer you, boo you, or whatever. Hopefully they're doing that anyway. But, I mean, you know, you're not getting out there and shaking hands too much because you're getting in the ring and, you know, you're working towards the camera and hopefully the camera's following you. So, that, like I say, the difference is, you know, the audience, the target audience that you're trying to hit. And with a regular show, obviously it's the crowd that's in there. And like I say TV taping, it's the crowd that's at home, hopefully watching your show. So it is a little bit of difference there. And you got to have timing. You know, you can't go over on your matches. They got to know what's going on. The referee's got to be sharp on what's going on, whether the match is going too long, too short, help them out with the spots that are going on. So it is a big difference and a lot of pre-planning as far as times, matches, amount of matches you need for however many shows you're taping for. So a lot going on, a big difference there. And with PWI, we were on for a year. I mean, that's a long time here in Indianapolis. Other than Dick the Bruiser, nobody has been on for a one-hour wrestling show that was on a regular channel, not a cable channel or a free channel or whatever. Not sure the word I want to say, but something that somebody could actually turn on and watch at a regular time. So it's tough to do, and nobody's really done it yet. There's a lot of internet shows now, so I mean people are getting somebody through some of these internet shows. So it's working for them in a way, but when you couldn't have a crowd in there now, but it's definitely a different beast to kind of handle.
When you were actively wrestling, did you personally have a favorite maneuver or a favorite hold that was in your repertoire?
No, not really. I mean, they didn't have a big finishing move. Mine were more like, you know, you end up with a sunset flip or a schoolboy or something like that. But I tried to style myself a little bit under like Wilbur Snyder, you know, more scientific style wrestling. I mean, if I wasn't wrestling as El Diablo, but if I was wrestling as Diamond Dan, more scientific style type wrestling, and do a few off the top rope moves, but nothing that I did that was just, you know, a finish for every match that I did, or if I was winning or whatever. So it was just more of outthinking your opponent and pin any 1-2-3 that way.
Sort of on the flip side of that, did you have a maneuver or a hold that you really hated taking from one of your opponents?
Probably a backdrop. You know, that was probably the one I didn't care for the most. I mean, depending on who was doing it, some knew how to do it and got you over good, and some didn't, just kind of flipped you. And, you know, if you didn't land properly, it probably hurt the worst. But I would say that was probably it at the time.
You'd be the anti-Rip Rogers then.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Rip loved to take him. Quicksilver loved to take him. But me, I want to say, so just more of not liking it, I guess, than anything else.
I don't blame you a bit for that. Now, of course, in wrestling for the last probably 35 to 40 years, one of the more popular moves in pro wrestling has been one of the most basic, that being the knife edge chop. Fans just love to see knife edge chops delivered because of the audio aspect of it. They can relate to it. Who would you say had the hardest knife edge chop that was ever given to you?
Given to me, probably Bobo Brazil Jr. He had probably one of the best. I mean, he laid it in. So, I mean, I would say around here it would be him, and I think a lot of people would say the same thing that's been in the ring with him. You know, if you can't take it, you need to get out of the ring. But it's that's why fans love it, because they hear that noise, they know it's legit. You know, it's not slapping the leg. You know, you're hitting somebody across the chest, and you're seeing it, you're hearing it, so you know that it's real. That's what makes the difference.
I would definitely agree with you on Bobo Brazil Jr. I've seen guys with chests that look like hamburger meat weeks after their match with Bobo, so I would say he's probably not only in your area, but anywhere, he's got one of the hardest chops.
That is true.
You referenced kind of patterning yourself after Wilbur Snyder, and for fans that are listening that aren't totally aware, Wilbur Snyder was one of the owners of the Indianapolis territory along with Dick the Bruiser. He was very legendary in the Midwest, didn't get out from that area very often, so a lot of fans nationwide aren't as familiar with him. But when you were coming up and when you were starting out wrestling, did you get a chance to work with Wilbur Snyder at all?
No, by that time he was pretty much done. I did do a show with Bruiser where I got to referee his match, or actually the show, but his match also. So they were kind of slowing down, stopped at that time. But I was trained by Wilbur's son-in-law, Mr. Electricity Steve Regal, the original Steve Regal. So I didn't get to meet them, but I did, you know, wrestle Bobo Brazil Sr. So I did get to meet quite a few of them, met the Sheik, a lot of them that were with Bruiser, you know, there towards the end or even during the heyday. I got to meet some of those, but unfortunately Wilbur Snyder was not one of them. He didn't do too much with shows, I think, after he kind of just stopped wrestling. He didn't have the interest in it, I think.
When you started up PWI, a lot of the people that you used did have ties to the old Indianapolis territory, guys like TJ Powers and Bobo Brazil Jr. They all wrestled for Dick the Bruiser towards the end. You had guys that came through the territory, where you had guys that were related to people that were in the Indianapolis territory. Do you think that when you were running PWI, having the people that had a connection to the Dick the Bruiser era helped the promotion, or do you think that in retrospect maybe you should have used people that didn't have as much connection to the old territory days?
Well, I mean, we kind of used to, you know, the people we knew, we were familiar with. I mean, we didn't have the internet back then, so we couldn't see matches from people. So the way we knew people was being on shows with them, and know how they worked and what kind of job that they did, you know. Were they good, not good? Can they be good on TV? So we did use some guys, you know, like Lightning Rod, T-Rex and those, Electric Eric Freedom out of Chicago area, Wisconsin area. So we did bring some other ones in, and then later on, you know, Tracy Smothers and Ian and people and Madman Pondo. So a lot of different people there, you know, towards the end of the TV that we were doing. We did bring in some different people. So, yeah, we kind of changed it up a little bit. But when we first started, we used the people that we knew and we felt safe with and knew that they would do a good job and you know, help promote the promotion itself. I don't think it hurt us in any sense using some of those guys, but I think, you know, it helped for the fact that some of the people knew who they were ahead of time, so it did help out there.
Now, Indianapolis at one point in time also received the television out of Memphis, and there still to this day remains a lot of wrestling fans that fondly remember the old Memphis territory when Jerry Jarrett and Jerry Lawler were in charge there. You would go down for television tapings there at Channel 5 in Memphis. Did you think that the Memphis style of wrestling was something that you wanted to try to get on some of the PWI shows, or did you think that the Indianapolis style, which was a little bit different, was going to work better with that particular audience?
Well, I think it was a kind of a cross between that. I mean, they, you know, they had their style there and, you know, had their own stars. But, I mean, that was, you know, a pretty big promotion at the time. You know, they had their live TV, then they had their loop that they were running every week. So, I mean, it was, you know, compared to what we were doing, you know, it was, you know, a huge promotion. But, you know, we drive 8 hours down there and we've done TV and, you know, drive 8 hours back to Indianapolis for, you know, make a big whopping $25. But, you know, we do it just to do it because we wanted to be part of it. And Spike Huber through Quicksilver got us down there in Memphis. And it, you know, it was an experience to learn how they handle things down there and, you know, the TV, because it does, they were live. So it had to be on time, perfect. You know, each time, well, as perfect as possible, I guess, you know, each time to kind of get things going. And, you know, the one time I went down there and wrestled the Snowman, you know, and didn't talk to him before the match. After the match, he was sitting in the crowd with his posse there. And, you know, that was kind of his style of things. And then when it was time for his match, he hopped in the ring, did what he needed to do, and went back out and sat in the crowd. So, then I went to the back and downtown Bruno goes, "Little stiff, huh?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I appreciate you letting me know now," but it was, you know, something I wasn't expecting. But, you know, you at least hope you have a chance to chat with whoever you're going to wrestle, but not at that time, so it didn't work out. But just definitely there is a difference of styles, but I think we used a little bit of mixture of both here. You know, didn't stick with too much Indiana style, but, you know, we crossed that a little bit when we got into some of the hardcore stuff with the barbed wire bat matches, and that was something that was never done here in Indiana before. And actually, the first time that we done it with Ian and Madman Pondo, we did it out in Danville for a TV taping. The crowd was absolutely quiet during the match because they didn't know what the hell was going on. Why are they doing this? It didn't make sense because they were just regular, casual wrestling fans, not ECW fans at that time, that were coming to the show, so they had no clue. But, of course, that's all changed, and it's, you know, accepted now, and just kind of a different niche in pro wrestling. So we could say we had the first baseball bat barbed wire match here in Indiana, so I guess we had that for going for us.
Absolutely. Alan, the wrestling industry today, pretty much more so than any time I can remember in the last 25 years, there's been nationally televised wrestling at various qualities and various size of networks. WWE, of course, the juggernaut on Fox and USA. You have AEW on TNT Network, Impact Wrestling at Access TV. Ring of Honor is owned by the Sinclair Broadcasting Company, so they're on standard broadcast TV. Then you have several promotions that have some sort of television presence regionally. Looking at things in the last, say, 20 years, what would you say has been the best television that you've seen cranked out on a regular basis?
Well, I mean, if you're not going to talk about the WWE, because, I mean, if you're talking TV, you know, production, continued storyline, so forth, you know, they're always probably going to be number one. AEW is doing, I think they're doing a great job with their TV. It is, you know, sometimes you see a few things where they don't have, I guess, the expertise on some of their camera angles, when they probably should switch, and they kind of miss a few things, or maybe they show a few things that should have been missed. And in some of the matches, you see some things that, you know, I won't call them botches, because, you know, just a miss here or there. But, you know, they're I would say they're number two there, right behind WWE. But, I mean, there's a lot of good shows out there. I mean, a lot of good wrestling. It just depends on what you like. I mean, I think it could be, you know, a local event. It could be a national event. People are going to like wrestling for different things. I think, you know, when NXT would come to a town, and I went to a couple shows, it was a totally different crowd. I mean, I call them a smart, not smart marks, but smart crowd. You know, they were the ones with the beards and almost like they're drinking, you know, their beers at the brewery type guys, you know. But it was definitely a different crowd. It wasn't your regular old-fashioned wrestling fans that were going to these events. So I think it's some of those shows are changing the type of fans that they're getting. Not necessarily it's the wrestling that's changing, I guess, per se. It's just a different, whatever style they got going on is the style of fans that they're bringing. And I think there's just more people that are watching wrestling, enjoying wrestling, which is a good thing, I think. I mean, because, you know, hopefully when this opens up with this COVID stuff, people are going to want to go back and see these live shows that are local to them, whether it's an independent show coming or a national show that comes to the town.
Well, we have hit the part of the show where we have a game we like to play. We call it Word Association. I'll throw out the names of some people that you most likely have come into contact with in the course of your career. First name or word that comes to mind is the answer. Are you prepared for some word association?
Okay. Yeah, I'll give it a try here.
All right, here we go. First one, Madman Pondo.
All right, so how many words are you wanting?
First word or handful of words that come to mind.
I would say a chameleon, because he changed. You know, and I mean that in a good way, because he changed from, you know, a wrestler that was, you know, getting booked, but not a ton, to finding a niche in pro wrestling to where people know his name, and he spent time in Japan, he's different parts of the world. So I think he made it work for him. So I would kind of say a chameleon, because he made that change and it worked out for him.
Bobo Brazil Jr.
It's hard to say a long stay. I mean, he's still wrestling and running shows. I mean, it's hard to believe. He's had heart attacks and everything else. I mean, he's just wrestling, local wrestling history.
Dangerous Bull Don Basher.
Don Basher. I won't say anything bad of the recently deceased. I mean, we had our ups and downs, but you know, he made WCWO the longest running promotion here in Indiana, so we'll give him credit.
Damian Cole,
great guy, met through New Era Wrestling. He actually come wrestled or trained in my little Red Barn gym that we had going for a while. Great guy, and still trying to get things going if things open back up.
Quicksilver.
Well, I mean, Quicksilver is the guy that probably helped me the most as far as when I first got started. I mean, taking me to shows. So, I mean, he, you know, he was my tag partner, and so I would say he's my tag partner from the start until now.
Corey Miller.
Roy Miller. Speak to him every day, but pretty much more about DJing now. But he's come a long way also from when he started wrestling. You know, he was a shorter, skinnier little kid at that time. He filled out, and he's become champion for numerous promotions. He's a hell of a guy.
El Diablo.
Well, I'm not sure what happened to El Diablo, but, he, you know, I think to myself El Diablo was a better wrestler than Diamond Dan because with the mask on, he could kind of do what he wanted and got away with more.
Superstar TJ Powers.
We started together, trained together, and were part of some of the same promotions. He went with me to Memphis. So, I mean, he's another long stay here in Indiana.
Itchcoma Weeder.
Itchcoma Weeder, he's another one that's been around a long time. His dad, Masher Stevens, booked me on his shows when he had some up north and actually tagged with the original Bobo Brazil Jr., which was Bobo's son, Carl. So, you know, he helped me get going when I first got started also.
Final name, Dice Man Ronnie Vegas.
Dice Man Ronnie Vegas. Dice, I'm not sure what we can say about Dice that hasn't already been said, but Dice is a character, that's for sure.
Agreed. Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by. I'm sure he has questions for you as well, so I'm going to pass things along to him.
All right.
Well, thank you, Sangai. Hello, Mr. Garza.
How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, can you hear me okay? Because we had some problems last week with communications and static. Am I coming in clear?
You're coming in clear.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Mr. Garza, I saw your YouTube video entitled Diamond Dan versus the Intruder. Do you remember this video?
Yeah, that was actually put together by Steve Dye, the Intruder, and he posted that online.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Mr. Garza, when the Intruder was led to the ring, or he made his entrance, he had two policemen walking in back of him from the 41-second mark to the 47-second mark. My question is, do you know if the rumors are true that the Intruder had been let out of a minimum security prison that very day, 3 hours before the match, for the white-collar crime of security and exchange fraud by computer, of which he did 3 years? Was that why he had a police escort?
That's very possible. That is. With the Intruder, who knows what could have happened during that time.
Yes, he cuts a mysterious figure, and not many people know his background. I think he might have been on security exchange fraud.
He might have been. He may have been buying some of that GameStop stock that was going on here recently.
Oh, yes. Boy, what do they call that? Cutting low
Short buying, or I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm not into that, so I'm not sure on that one. Short selling,
oh, okay.
Short buying.
Well, Mr. Garza, if the Intruder does go back to a minimum security prison, will you visit him for a conjugal visit? That's what our fans want to know.
Well, I don't know about that one there. I've seen too many prison movies, so I don't think that I'll be going for that kind of visit.
Okay, very good. Okay, well, Mr. Garza, I was very surprised by the Intruder's entrance music. If you remember, it was opera, and I believe it was the composition of Giovanni Cesare Nette, who lived from 1649 to 1686, and the song was Audio Cara Regno D'Amor. My question is, was your initial plan against the intruder to lock him up and in a voice no one else could hear say to him, Giovanni Nette couldn't hold Sebastian Bach of the rock group Skid Row's Jockstrap to throw him off his game?
Well, that's actually what I whispered to him when I had him down in a headlock takeover, that I told him that's what upset him so much.
Okay, all right. Sebastian Bach and Giovanni Nette, quite the contrast. Okay. I thought that was your plan. Okay. Well, Mr. Garza, speaking of entrance music, rock and roll has frequently touched on the subject of mental health as its subject, such as Heart's Crazy on You, Paul Simon's Still Crazy After All These Years, Cypress Hill's Insane in the Membrane, and Crazy Train by Ozzy Osbourne. Now, Belson Was a Gas was a song by the Sex Pistols off their album Never Mind the Bollocks, and it's a song about World War II Nazi Germany's death camp, Bergen-Belsen. While it does not have the word crazy in it, I'm sure many people were driven crazy by being imprisoned in Bergen-Belsen. My question is, have you yourself ever heard of any wrestler, be it male, female, or transgender, use this song, Belsen Was a Gas, by the Sex Pistols, as their entrance music?
Not that I can think of, but I'm sure that it's probably been done.
Okay. Have you yourself listened to the album Never Mind the Bollocks and listened to Belsen Was a Gas?
I think I probably must have missed that one. It must have skipped my playlist.
All right. Guess what your homework assignment is?
Yeah, I'll have to look that one up.
Okay. It's really not that bad of a song. Okay. Well, Mr. Garza, at the 3 minute and 4 second mark of the match, you picked the intruder up to about a chest high height and slammed him to the mat. When he was being introduced by the announcer said the intruder weighed 237 pounds. That's quite a bit of weight to pick up and slam. My question is, when you were working out at that time, did you do a lot of powerlifting squats for lower body strength?
I did some. It wasn't my favorite, but I did do some squats. I usually stuck to the bench press and hope that helped me out. But you had to do your squats.
Okay. All right. Very good. Squats. Okay. How about hill running? Did you ever do any running up hills, like Kurt Angle used to do in Pennsylvania?
No, I always preferred to run down. It was much easier.
Run down. Oh, okay. All right, very good. Okay. Well, Mr. Garza, after an elbow drop at the 4 minute and 53 second mark on a fallen intruder, you successfully followed that up with a Hulk Hogan leg drop at the 4 minute, 56 second mark. How many times have you met Hulk Hogan?
Zero, actually.
Oh, zero. Okay. Were you saddened by the passing of the man who played Debo in the movie Fridays, Tommy Lister, and in wrestling circles he was known as Zeus? Were you saddened by this recent
Actually, passing? Yes, I was. And I did meet him once when I went down to WCW TV. He was down there visiting backstage and got to talk to him for just a short while. So I met him, but not Hogan.
Oh, okay. Nice guy. Was he a nice guy in person?
Yeah, he was nice and talked to everybody. So I think he was just there visiting and maybe trying to get his name back in there a little bit at the time. Who knows?
Okay. All right. Did he have a chance to do an impression for you? What up, Craig? What up, Smokey? Did he say that?
No, I think he didn't get a chance for that one.
Okay. All right. Well, Mr. Garza, who would you rather have been managed by if you could time travel and alter the course of history? Would you rather have been managed by Scary Sherry Martell, who managed Zeus, or the lovely Elizabeth, who managed the Macho Man?
Well, probably not Elizabeth, because Macho Man would not have ever allowed that. But probably Sherry, because if I couldn't handle it in the ring, she could have on the outside. So I think that would have been quite a team.
Yes. I could only wish that we could travel back in time and in some type of hyperloop and have Scary Sherry manage Man Pondo or Miss Elizabeth.
That would work.
Okay.
That would work.
Well, Mr. Garza, a seminal moment in movie history occurred when Sean Penn, who played Jeff Spicoli, entered the history class of Mr. Hand, who was played by Ray Walston. First of all, do you remember that when Sean Penn entered the history class at Fast Time at Ridgemont High? Do you remember this?
I sure do.
Oh, okay. When Mr. Hand asked Spicoli,
I remember another scene better, but go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, when Mr. Hand asked Spicoli why he was late, Spicoli said that the food line for the food in the cafeteria was too long. At this point, Mr. Hand ripped up Jeff's class schedule, and Spicoli said, "Hey, bud, what's your problem?" Mr. Garza, at this point, how much of an impact would Scully have made in cinematic history if he executed a double leg or single leg takedown on Mr. Hand, in your opinion?
I don't know if it's would have changed the course of history there or not, but I think what he did was just fine, but people remember, so that's all that matters.
Do you think Stoner Spicoli could have had the mental clarity at that moment to have executed such a move as a single leg or double leg takedown on Mr. Hand?
While I've seen many of wrestlers wrestle Stone, I don't think Spicoli could have done it himself, though.
Oh, okay. Now, what was the scene that you were going to talk about?
Well, it's probably just the swimming pool scene.
I don't remember the swimming pool scene at Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Oh, yes, I do, where she came out of the pool.
Yes.
Oh, boy, yes. Oh, okay. Now, Mr. Garza, did you know, before this, I had mentioned Hart and their song Crazy on You. Did you know Hart was in that movie? The Nancy and Ann Wilson sisters were in that movie for a brief cameo.
I guess I must not have realized that. No, I didn't.
Well, they were parked at a stoplight, and I can't remember the main guy that he was in his pirate hat, and he was driving his car, and he pulled up alongside Ann and Nancy Wilson. And they looked over and giggled at him because he was wearing his pirate hat, and he threw it away.
I remember that scene, but I guess I didn't know it was them.
Oh, yes. Oh, okay. Well, now you have two homework assignments, one to look up that scene if you can see it on YouTube, and also listen to Belson Was a Gas by John Lydon of the Sex Pistols.
I'll do that right away.
Oh, very good. Oh, okay. Right. Well, Mr. Garza, did you ever have a chance to meet King Kong Bundy, who appeared twice on Married with Children?
Briefly at a show, yes.
Seemed
to be a nice guy.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Good. I wouldn't want to get on his bad side.
Oh,
okay.
No, not that.
Okay. Who would you yourself, if you could time travel and arrange it, rather wrestle in the ring, Jefferson or Al Bundy?
Oh, wow.
Al Bundy, okay. He actually had a football. He was very successful in college playing football, so he may have been tougher.
Right, he threw 4 touchdowns in 1 game.
For who?
Well, for, now you think it's high. What was his high school name?
Polk High.
There you go. There you go.
All right. Well, Mr. Garza, in your opinion, who would have been a better valet, Kelly Bundy or Marcy Darcy?
Well, depends on what you were going for. For obviously looks, I would say Kelly to distract the wrestlers and the fans, and Marcy probably get in there and do the dirty work.
Oh, okay, like a thumb to the throat. Okay.
Yeah, probably, at least.
Oh, very good. Okay. All right. Well, Mr. Garza, are you currently a member of the Cauliflower Alley Club?
Actually, no, but I plan on it and hope to make it out there. I know they moved it till September for the reunion in Las Vegas and hope to go out there possibly this year.
Okay. All right. Okay. Good luck with that. All right. Well, at this time, I'm going to turn it back over to Sign Guy, and good luck with your 2 homework assignments.
Well, thank you. You look up other scene yourself, too.
Oh, okay. Back to you, Sign Guy.
Thanks, QT. Well, Diamond Dan, one of the people that ran WCW for quite a while is someone that has been up here in our neck of the woods for the last decade or so, that being Kevin Sullivan. I know he was one of the more respected minds in professional wrestling as far as booking goes and for running television. When you were going to WCW, did you run into Kevin Sullivan very often?
I did see him there, but actually I seen him again at StarCast and spent a little bit of time around him then. And, WrestleCrap had a couple things going on with him and Eric Bischoff and kind of some Q&A sessions there, and seemed to be, a nice guy, willing to help out and answer any questions anybody had. So, back when he was wrestling, I think it was a little bit different, how he was doing things. But I think now he knows his time is helping as many people as possible. He still wrestles. He still gets in the ring and does some stuff and helps out promotions, but, he's one of the smartest guys out there, when you come to pro wrestling, all aspects of it.
Absolutely. He's often here locally. A lot of times, whenever he has time in his schedule, he'll appear for our Washington and Oregon-based promotions. Now, someone else that was in WCW for quite a while is someone that shortly after that went to work for you, and he was also a huge help to a lot of people in the wrestling industry. I think it's safe to say that it's very underestimated the amount of people he actually helped in their careers, that being Tracy Smothers. We lost Tracy a few months ago. As someone that worked with him and booked him, what do you think his true legacy is going to be to professional wrestling?
I think him helping out other wrestlers. I mean, he's always was willing, to help them out, whether it was in the ring, if he was wrestling them, to, help them establish them and make them look good, or help them behind the scenes and offer some advice. I mean, not in a bad way. I mean, he'd try to help you out the best way he could. When I went down to WCW the first time, he was one of the first ones that came up and greeted me, said hi. He didn't have to do that, but he's just that kind of person. And then when I wrestled him, or El Diablo wrestled him anyway, in PWI, I mean, he was more than willing. He was a name. El Diablo wasn't, and he was willing to do whatever, and he was just a great guy. I think, like I say, his legacy is his willingness to help someone else out and not necessarily to put himself over, which is kind of the complete opposite on a lot of wrestlers.
how when you were running PWI and you brought in guys that had been on national TV like Tracy, like Ian Rotten, Dice Man Ronnie Vegas was doing some nationally televised shows around that same time period. Were they a help for you not only in the ring, obviously, but were they a help as far as putting together television and helping you with that aspect of the show, or did they just more or less come in and wrestle and do what you wanted them to do as far as in the ring?
No, they all had, you know, their different ideas of how they could help out, and were more than willing to share their ideas, you know, with Dallas and myself. So, you know, nobody just came in and said, you know, pay me and I'll be gone. You know, they were there, and they, you know, they helped out as much as possible. So it was definitely, you know, a good thing.
Now, obviously, you were booking a lot of people that at the time were getting their start in the business. You had guys like the Midnight Rocker, and you had guys like Indiana Kid Jr., and you had guys like Troy Miller and people like that. When you look back at some of the young talent that you were giving their very first breaks to as far as getting on television and trying to establish themselves in the wrestling business, who are some of the names that come to mind that you were most proud of as they grew and became sort of the leaders of the wrestling industry in the area?
I mean, I think you mentioned a lot of them. I mean, you know, Joey Kid Owens, you know, he's, you know, now taken over WCWO, but I mean, he's done stuff on his own for a long time and has had a lot of great ideas of how to do things. Troy Miller, you know, he's wrestled a lot Northern Indiana for a lot of the promotions up there, was champion for a lot of those promotions, and, you know, he's tried to do what he can to make not only the promotion look good, but himself look good, you know, in the ring as far as his style, his gear, his look, and everything else. So there's a lot of them that, you know, I'm happy that they stayed in the business for a while, did what they could, and, you know, got to live their dream a little bit.
As someone that still is out there and working on shows as a ring announcer, who would you say are some of the talents out there that are just getting their start, like maybe a couple of years into the business at the most, that you think has that potential to be the superstars in the next few years?
There's so many of them. I mean, there's so many guys out there that are wrestling and doing a great job and putting on great matches and taking big chances with some big moves, and even if it's in front of, you know, 50 people or whatever. So it's tough to say, because, you know, when I first wrestled Chris Hero, he wasn't Chris Hero back then, but, you know, he wasn't that great. But, I mean, he went from place to place to place and got better and better and better to become one of the best in the world. So I think things can change from people depending on what they do and how much they learn. So I think there's a ton of them that can make it and are making it from Indiana. There's a lot of names from Indiana that are out there right now, whether they're on Impact or whether they're on, you know, AEW or MLW or whatever. They're just a ton of talent right now that's out there that's doing a great job. I don't want to necessarily single any of them out, because there's just too many of them.
Well, we have hit the part of the show where we have one last game we like to play. We call it Fact or Crap. The way it works, I'll throw out an urban legend that has been making its way around locker rooms for quite some time. And based on your knowledge and experience, you give the opinion if it is a fact that actually happened or just a bunch of crap that people made up in the locker room one day. Are you prepared for a round of Fact or Crap?
Sure. Let's go.
All right. Your Fact or Crap urban legend is that prior to WrestleMania 9, Randy Savage sucker punched Hulk Hogan, which is why Hulk Hogan was sporting a black eye during the WrestleMania 9 pay-per-view. Based on your personal knowledge and experience, and keep in mind there's no right or wrong answer, would you say it is a fact or just a bunch of crap?
Well, I'm not sure on this one, so I'm going to say crap.
All right. Well, we are down to the last few minutes of the show today, and I want to make sure there is ample time for you. If there's anything you want to say to our listeners, plug and promote anything and everything, social media, upcoming appearances, any merchandise, favorite charity, anything at all, floor is all yours.
All right, I appreciate it. Well, if you want to check out some PWI wrestling, the videos, the tapes are on YouTube under Diamond Dan PWI. Just search that and you'll see all the videos. And there's a ton of WWA Dick the Bruiser matches on there. Also some Detroit the Sheik matches are on there. So go check that out. If you're interested in ever having a DJ, a Diamond Dan DJ, you could go to Diamond Dan DJ on Facebook there. And it's my Facebook page for that, for Diamond Dan Entertainment would be what you would search it for. Always the hotline that's been around for 25-plus years now. It is 317-335-4688. That's 335-4688, so 317 area code. So check that out for the news. I know everybody gets their news on the Internet, but if you want to hear us talk about it, then get on there and listen. But just appreciate you having me on here and, you know, trying to hopefully open up the state of Indiana and get some more wrestling going here.
Can't wait for that to happen. Had to take a year off of getting out there because of the circumstances, but I'm hoping to get out that way myself this year. Hopefully we'll cross paths again. It's been way too long. And definitely want to thank you for coming back to the show. It is always our great pleasure to have you here, and you always are welcome to come back anytime.
Well, I appreciate you having me, and hopefully I'll be back soon then.
Absolutely. Fans, definitely go on the YouTube, search out the PWI videos. They were fantastic. I absolutely loved PWI and got to go to a few of those tapings, so you might even see myself sitting there in the crowd watching the show. So definitely check that out on the YouTubes. Lots of Diamond Dan videos out there. So check it out. Get familiar if you are not. Diamond Dan, hopefully we'll be on some shows near you as a ring announcer as we open things back up. So look for that. We'll be back with you on Sunday afternoon. We have an Arizona-based ring announcer with us Sunday. That is Will E., podcaster and ring announcer. So make sure you have plans to be with us then. We'll talk to you soon. And be safe out there. Out and support local independent pro wrestling.
All right. Goodbye, everybody.